And the people in Corinth evidently wrote Paul and asked him four questions. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me. Okay, so that there's that one. Chapter 8 begins with now. Chapter 12, now. And chapter 16, now. So it appears those are the four questions. Chapter 10, I think, has moreover, which kind of adds to 8, and then I think 15 is moreover. Okay, now here he, in essence, balled them out for six chapters before he even started answering the questions. Okay, the first three chapters about formal education or against formal education. Chapter 6 is about, or 5 is about fornication in the church. 6 is about church-like courts or whatnot. Okay, 7. Now concerning the things whereof you wrote unto me, it is good for men not to touch a woman. Okay, so as you read down, this is 40 verses in this chapter. This will be about marriage, divorce, remarriage, or marriage desertion in this case, and remarriage. And you probably will find in churches where they see a lot of adults get saved, this will be an issue in a church. Okay, because when you have adults getting saved, probably both lost, one gets saved, you can't make the other one get saved, and so if one gets saved, it gets on fire for God, the other one probably isn't going to appreciate it. And so you have some principles laid out in 1 Corinthians 7 of what to do. Okay, and so the background of this, the Lord talked about divorce and remarriage in Matthew 19, and Paul talked about it here. So these are the two major places in the Bible it's mentioned. Matthew 19, he was dealing with Pharisees. And 1 Corinthians 7, he was dealing with carnal believers or baby Christians. Now this is a thing that you want to hopefully have an attitude when you have something like this. You want to have an attitude if you're involved. If you're directly involved, have an attitude like Joseph. Joseph and Mary. Can you imagine the shock that Joseph had when he discovered his wife was with child? Under the Old Testament covenant, he was obligated to make a public example out of her. But he didn't want to do that because he loved her. And so he was churning through his mind, what should I do? Should I make a public example out of her? As the Bible says, that's what would please my God. But I don't really want to do that because I love Mary, and so I don't want to do that. Now, how could I do this? He said, well, maybe I can put her away, but I can do it privately. And so his attitude is one of trying to figure out the Lord's will, what he should do. And then in the night when the Lord gave him the answer. Okay, now if you're appraised of somebody going through these troubles, I would hope and pray that you would try to help them the best you can. Instead of sticking your nose in the air and just tell them how wicked they all are. Some people think that in a divorce it takes two wrong parties, but I would dare say in many cases that would be true, but not in all cases. Yes? Right, because it was like a betrothal. Right.
And then he never talks about them getting married. Does it ever say anywhere that they did get married?
She became his wife.
I mean, just that he became his wife.
Right. Okay, so this is a very... I think it's an important subject, but I think it's a subject where hopefully a person would pray and try to seek the Lord's will more than anything. Okay, verse 1, it is good for man not to touch woman. The implications are obvious. It's not against shaking hands. things like that. Okay, usually the Bible will use the word know, where Adam knew Eve. When it uses it like that, know or knowledge. Knowledge is an interesting word. Look in 1828. Knowledge, just the word knowledge. You run about the seventh or eighth definition of knowledge, and it refers to the marriage relationship. Knowledge. In the know. You ever hear that one? He's in the know. When somebody's in the know, it's most of the time it's a perverted situation. Because that's what the Sodomites said. They wanted to know those guys. In the know. So it's good for man not to touch woman. Okay, and the standard application of that, or the wise application, is to abstain from all appearance of evil. And anywhere between the opposite sex, that's a noun, not a verb. A person should always be very discreet and businesslike. Should always be very above board, abstain from all appearance of evil. And usually if you see a touchy-touchy preacher, he's going to get himself in trouble. I personally would rather go to the extreme, and I would rather have the women think I'm a snob. You know, I'd rather go to extreme of anything, because I am prejudiced because I have one wife. Okay, and that's the way I believe it should be. I like a church where the men mainly hang around the men and the women hang around the women. Okay, so it's good for man not to touch a woman. Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife and let every woman have her own husband. Fornication is defined in Leviticus 18. Okay, then it says, let the husband render unto the wife due benevolence, and likewise also the wife unto the husband. The wife hath not power of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband hath not power of his own body, but the wife. The implications are obvious. Defraud you not one the other, except it be for a consent, with consent for a time. So there's a separation. The Bible allows for separation. That you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again, that Satan tempt you not for your incontinency. For I speak this by permission and not by commandment. Okay, the Bible never commands celibacy. It's never commanded. A doctrine of devils commands celibacy, 1 Timothy 4, and that would be obviously the Catholic Church. Okay, so verse 7, for I would that all men were even as I myself. Paul was a single man. There's no record of his marriage. So he's saying it ideal. Now what you're going to see in Matthew 19 and 1 Corinthians 7, the Lord will give what they consider an ideal situation, and then it goes plan A, plan B, and C, and down the line. So Paul is saying this, verse 6, not by commandment. This is not a commandment. He's just saying this is what I like. And he says, I would that all men were even as I myself. A single man, go anywhere, anytime, any place he wants. Okay, but every man hath his proper gift of God. Now that will be cross-referenced to Matthew 19, verse 11 and 12. But every man hath his proper gift of God, and there over there is talking about eunuchs. Eunuchs of men, eunuchs of self-control, eunuchs of nature. Okay, it says, one after this manner, another after that. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. Stay single. But if you cannot contain, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. Now, verse 9 would be a very clear definition of what marriage is all about. Marriage is not per se the ceremony. Marriage is the wedding night. See that? Verse 9. But if you cannot contain, let a man marry, for it is better to marry than to burn. Burn, we say, in heat. That's where that phrase comes from. And the only reason I'm going through this is because that's where we're at, and I don't like talking about this stuff, be honest with you. But it's in the Scriptures. Okay, so it's better to marry than to burn. Burn what? In lust. And as things are in America, where things are so perverted, it gets worse and worse all the time. Okay, then 10. And unto the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, let not the wife depart from her husband. But if she depart, let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband, and let not the husband put away his wife. Okay, now, obviously, in the way with the marriage license, you have a different take on this thing. And there's very, very few churches you can preach this on because most people won't even know what I'm talking about. If you read the background of a marriage license means permission. The state gives you permission to do something that's lawful. Okay? A marriage license brings a man, a woman, and the state in a union. That's what a marriage license does. A man, a woman, and the state. So you have two's company, three's the crowd. Okay, that's what a marriage license does. Now, with a marriage license, then you got to follow these little regulations the state has, you know, check, you know, for VD and check for this, and, you know, get health stuff and all that kind of jazz. And then you, if a person wants to divorce, they go to a lawyer and get divorced. But if you have something under a church structure, as they used to always do, marriage license did not come in play until the late 1800s, and that was mainly for the interracial marriages. That's what the purpose of it was originally. But if you have a marriage coverture, and that's a good word to look up in a blacks, a coverture under a church, when they have troubles, who do they have to go to try to fix their troubles? They go to the church. And what's the church going to advise? Work it out. Best they can, work it out. Or the church is going to get more involved and they're going to find out who's wrong in the problem and then issue an order as a church body. But, of course, you know, who does this anymore? I'm just telling you a little bit of the history of America's history back in those days. Back in the 1800s, you know, if a couple was going to get married, they asked mom and dad, went to the preacher, and that was all they did. Had a nice ceremony. Now, in the Bible, as far as marriage, divorce, remarriage goes, I have four tapes on this where we go into detail in these things. Number one, the Bible, not command. This is not a command in the Bible, but the number one thing in the Bible is remain single. Okay, number two, okay, if you're going to get married, marry someone of like faith that believes the same, everything like that. Okay, number three, if problems develop, then don't seek a divorce. Number four, but if it happens, okay, now stay unmarried. Number five, well, if the Lord brings somebody into life, okay, now get remarried if the divorce was scriptural. In the New Testament, in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy 24, the basis is that a man can divorce a woman for any cause. Deuteronomy 24, 1 through 4. The Pharisees asked Jesus that question in Matthew 19, verse 3. And then Jesus raises the standard to fornication. Okay, now if there's fornication involved, then a divorce is allowed. The Bible regulates divorce. Okay, so fornication involved. What's fornication? Well, it's adultery, bestiality, sodomy, or incest. That's defined in Leviticus 18. Okay, now if a divorce takes place, and there's those things involved, okay, then the other party can seek a marriage, a second marriage. Okay, they can seek according to Matthew 19, verse 9. But the Lord says, marry in the Lord. In 1 Corinthians 7. Now, in 1 Corinthians, it talks about another reason, and this is desertion. That's where he's going at in 1 Corinthians 7. He's going toward the idea of desertion, where the unsaved party says, I don't want to hear this Bible stuff anymore. I don't want to hear it. I'm out of here. And they go, and you just let them go. And then you just wait it out and pray and see what happens. Okay, so that's what Paul's aiming at here. Now, when you get dealing with marriage principles, things like that, probably the biggest problem in marriage is that people don't understand the opposite sex. They just don't. A man treat a woman like they think a man wants to be treated. And a woman treats a man like she thinks a woman wants to be treated, and that's not how it works. Men like admiration. You know, tell him how hairy his chest is. I don't know. Tell him how big his muscles are. Tell him how much hair he's got in his head. No, he wants somebody to believe in him. That's what he wants. He don't want his wife to tell him all his parts where he's wrong. She's not his critic. He wants somebody to believe in him and to encourage him and to motivate him to do something, especially for God. He wants admiration, but she wants attention. She wants you to sit down and talk to her. Tell her what's going on. See, now she thinks he wants attention because that's what she wants, so she gives him attention, and then he says, leave me alone. And he thinks she wants admiration, so he says, boy, the house is clean, and walks away, and she says, that's not good enough. See, there are differences between us. And so a person doesn't put aside their differences, they understand them. Okay, a man generally is logical thinking. A woman is more on emotion. And that's just saying we're different. That's all that it is. Okay, a man thinks logically about things, and a woman is emotional because she's changing every day. Especially when she's with child, she's really changing. And that's a time she needs to rely on her husband more than anything. And don't have that benefit, rely on God more than anything. Okay, so that's the logic and emotion. Okay, admiration and attention. Another thing is men are excited by sight and women by touch. That's why it says good for men not to touch a woman. And that's why the Bible says that a woman should wear modest clothing. Okay, and that's now when you see women getting excited by sight, you're dealing with a wicked woman. If they go to these adult, the women going to the adult bookstores, you're dealing with an extremely wicked woman. Okay, and then a man thinks more long-term thoughts, where a lady thinks more of now, temporal things. She says it's broke. He says, okay, I'll do it next year. Long term. And that's just the way we are. We understand the difference. We try to meet the needs of each other. Okay? That's some of the differences between a male and female, and very important to understand those things. Okay? Now, let's see. We got down verse 9, 10, 11... Okay, 12. But to the rest speak I not, not the Lord, if any brother hath a wife that believeth not, okay, she's lost, and she be pleased to dwell with him, let him not put her away. Okay, if you're okay, she could handle his gospel, and he can handle a little bit of him reading the Bible, and she's not put out with it, okay, don't put her away. And the woman which hath an husband that believeth not, and if he be pleased to dwell with her, let her not leave him. Doesn't it seem to imply that the man seeks a divorce and a woman basically can't? It's kind of the way it's looking, but I'm not saying yeah or nay on that, but that seems the way it's written. Okay, for the unbelieving husband is sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified by the husband. Else were their children unclean, but now are they holy. But if the unbelieving depart, let him depart. A brother or sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God hath called us all to peace. He's not under bondage. What bondage? The law? They're single, they can remarry. How many you going to have? Question? 14? I was coming back to that. Okay. Okay. One thing, and when you're dealing with this, is let's say a person is more so the victim or whatnot. In some cases, and I would say not too many, but on a few cases, there can be an innocent party. Why would I say that? Because God divorced Israel, and you're not going to tell me that God was wrong. Jeremiah 3:8, Isaiah 50:1. And so, in essence, you kind of get to see what God is putting up with all the Christians down here. Different viewpoint of looking at things. And boy, isn't God long-suffering with us. Okay, now back to 14, you know, Don raised her hand on. And here's something I have no proof for, but this is something I kind of think. If you have one saved parent, mother or father, then the children are in a state where it says holy. Verse 14. Else were the children unclean, but now are they holy. When you have one saved party, the children attain some sort of a stage of holiness. What's that mean? I really don't know. But I kind of sort of lean towards that those children would go into rapture if they're before accountability. If both parents are lost and the children before accountability, I think they stay. Now, I got no proof of it. I'm just thinking that. Anybody got anything on that thought? Me? They would go to heaven. Okay, but the... Right. Even if the parents were lost, they would go to heaven. For the rapture. Yeah. Yeah, then that's what I'm thinking. There'd be no children around.
Right. I don't see that.
So I don't know.
I know it.
So that's why I say there's something.
But after rapture, like unsaved girls are pregnant, they're not going to lose a baby. Babies still wouldn't be there. Baby wouldn't be raptured. They were pregnant.
Yeah, I would say you're right on that, Don. No, they can't. A mark of beast has to be something that's accepted voluntarily of your free will. See, that's why, that's a toughie. Isn't that verse something to think about? What's he talking about? Or else the children are unclean, but now are they holy? Vice versa, yeah. Sanctified, set apart. Set apart towards more of a chance of God bringing them salvation. I don't know. I don't know all the implications there, 14 and 15. Yeah. And I give you as little as light as I got. Barry?
In the calling the word bastard.
Yeah, in Hebrews.
Possibly that the child no longer a bastard in a sense.
How would you be applying that?
To unsaved people. Children from the devil.
Yeah.
Bastard children.
Yeah.
What is unclean people? That verse. It says that they're unclean, and then it says elsewhere your children are unclean. But now are they holy? So that unclean there means the ones that aren't in the sex safe home, they're unclean.
Right.
So that's what they should look at.
Right. But I can see the inconsistency of death too. Where death, I would say the slight difference is at death there's no hope of salvation, where say the kid's 6 years old, the rapture takes place, he hasn't reached the age yet, well now he's got 7 years, well if he makes it through, but he's got, if he gets killed prematurely still before that age, he'd go to heaven, but yet he still gets a chance to hear the gospel. I don't know. Yeah. They won't have that chance. They would still be under the age. Right. Something. But you see, I appreciate this, where we're not arguing about something, we're trying to brainstorm, figure this out, maybe get some light out of this. This is what I refer to as something that someone really trying to honestly try to figure something out, instead of trying to, this is what I believe, you know, all that stuff. Go ahead. Yeah. Well, then they're going together, but if it's an unsaved woman, yeah. Right. 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 Yeah, there's still going to be birth. Stock of the diaper companies. Oh, profits, money, profits. That was me that said that. Okay, well. That was about 5-watt light bulb I had on that one. Okay, 15, 16. For what knowest thou, O wife, whether thou shalt save thy husband? Or how knowest thou, O man, whether thou shalt save thy wife? But as God hath distributed to every man, as the Lord hath called every man, so let him walk, and so ordain I in all churches. Is a man called to be called being circumcised? Let him not become uncircumcised. And he called in uncircumcision, let him not be circumcised. Just give illustrations of, if you're married, stay married. If you're not, stay, you know, don't get married. Circumcision is nothing, uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandments of God. 20 down to 24 gets into slavery. The Bible doesn't abolish slavery, the Bible regulates it. Let every man abide in the same calling wherein he is called. Art thou being a servant? Art thou called being a servant? Care not for it. But if thou mayest be made free, use it rather. For he that is called in the Lord, being a servant, is the Lord's free man. Likewise, also he that is called, being free, is Christ's servant. Ye are bought with a price. Be not ye the servants of men. Brethren, let every man wherein he is called therein abide with God. So the idea, like Onesimus was a slave of Philemon, he gets saved, now they're both saved. Philemon isn't obligated to free him, and he doesn't have to go down and go to the NAACP meetings and try to get, you know, his civil rights. Now he abides in his calling. Now if he serves Onesimus or Philemon 7 years, then Philemon's obligated by the Bible to set him free. Actually, 6 years, the seventh year, they go out free. Okay, so is it saying that the marriage relationship is like a slave relationship? I don't know.
After 6 years.
Yeah. Went there a hillbilly song several years ago, 7 years with the wrong woman. That was what Jacob had, remember. Kind of came off of Jacob. Okay, 25. Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment of the Lord. Yet I give my judgment as one that hath obtained mercy of the Lord to be faithful. I suppose therefore that this is good for the present distress. I say, it is good for man so to be. Okay, here's real clear, 27, 28. Art thou bound unto a wife? Seek not to be loosed. Art thou loose from a wife? Seek not a wife. But if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. Okay, now why would he say that if he's talking to single people? Someone who's never been married. Obviously he's talking to somebody else here. Wouldn't it seem strange? You got, you know, somebody 20 years old, never been married. Somebody else 21, never been married. And then he says, we're going to get married. Oh, okay, it's not a sin for you to do that. Well, obviously. So there's a different implication here. He's dealing with somebody who was married prior to this. But if thou marry, thou hast not sinned. And if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Now there's two different people there. The reason why I say this is the Pharisaical crowd will tell somebody that's gone through an unfortunate situation, a divorce, and then they say, well, you have to be single the rest of your life. Now, Tony York experienced this. And a lot of us know Tony York, if you know his experience, his story. Tony's first wife left him. And we won't go into the details, but she left him. And eventually, I don't know, a year or so later, he kept preaching, and he preaches for some guy down in Evansville, Indiana. And this was just like, I mean, this was even a month after she left. And so he preached for the guy, and then he said something about Tony about his wife leaving him. You know, bad news travels fast. And he said, well, you going to get remarried? First off, what a dumb question to say to a man 30 days after he's lost his wife. Like to wring the guy's neck. What kind of a Pharisee would throw a question out like that to somebody? Where's your mercy? He said, well, if you did, we wouldn't have you preach for us. I think I would have walked out right on the spot. You have a happy marriage, it's by the grace of God. It's by the grace of God. So, well, Tony is remarried and he's still preaching. Just because his wife quit don't mean he should quit. I would, you know, hope a person should have a little mercy for other folks. But the Pharisees, they do have a time with it. The Pharisees are almost to the point where if you have only one wedding ceremony, you could shack up all you want on the side. Just as long as you only have one wedding ceremony, you're still okay. And of course, that's what a lot of Baptist preachers have done. And that's the hypocrisy of it. Okay, but if thou marry, thou hast not sinned, and if a virgin marry, she hath not sinned. Nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. Trouble in the flesh. Two people from two different families coming together, you're going to have trouble in the flesh. Just common sense. Unless you... Ken Gilchrist said to Melissa before they married, he said, "Now, I just want to let you know that when we do have a disagreement..." How do you say that, Jan? He said, "I want you to know that you'll figure out that it'll be solved when you know I'm right." I mean, he let her know before they got married. She married him.
They got a bunch of kids.
They got a bunch of kids. Yeah, that's right. Obviously, there's going to have to be some give and take. Okay, nevertheless, such shall have trouble in the flesh, but I spare you. Then he says, "But this I say, brethren, the time is short. It remaineth that both they that have wives be as though they had none, and they that weep as though they wept not, and they that rejoice as though they rejoiced not, and they that buy as though they possessed not." Isn't that funny? He said the time is short. 2,000 years? Time is short. "And they that use this world as not abusing it, for the fashion of this world passeth away. But I would have you without carefulness," or full of care. "He that is unmarried careth for the things that belong to the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife." Now, America's got a goofy system of dating, and the dating system is obviously a failure. And so you have a bunch of Christians who have seen the failure of the dating system, and so now they jump over to the extreme and set up this courtship stuff where mom, and some of them will go to the point where mom and dad picks the mate for the one. And, of course, that's way over there. I dare believe that what a child needs to do is just serve God. Serve God, and then along the way, when God points somebody out, oh, okay. Marriage, that's I guess where they say marriages are made in heaven. But most, what I really have against youth groups, and that's why we don't promote youth groups, is most youth groups is nothing but a pairing up of the boys and girls. That's all that it is. And it's a terrible waste of time. Terrible waste of money. Especially when he's got to buy all the stuff to please her when he's not even married to her. And you're not even investing right. Okay? And the emotions that get involved, too much heartaches and emotions. So a child needs to rely very strongly on their parents for these things. And that the girl should play with the girls, enjoy life, grow up slowly. And the boys should just have a good time with the boys. The girls got cooties. And they had them cooties way past 20 years old. Okay, but just let the kids grow up slow. But you see, nowadays, in Rensselaer, we had, of course, when I got down there, you know, Howell's Anderson training, you know, real quick, you get a bus, and you start bringing all the kids in. And I know God got us into the bus ministry. I know He did. And I know He got us out, too. But, you know, after about maybe a year into it, about 2 years into it, we have a big day, and I have 180 people in church and about 150 are kids, and it wasn't real organized. And eventually the bus crowd starts dropping and the drive-in crowd starts raising. And then the bus kids start getting more perverted. And what do you do when you got these kids who are perverted and then you've got your kids? You're trying to shelter them from that stuff. And then you have 5- and 6-year-old kids talking intimate details of what goes on. And so we pretty stopped that. But that's what these kids are being taught. And now we have babies having babies. Young kids having kids. And they don't know what's going on. It's a big mess. And so, as Paul is writing this out, we obviously got big problems in our country. Okay, so it's trouble, trouble, trouble. The world's passing away. What's the big hurry? Let them enjoy being a kid. You know, the boys go hunting, fishing, all that stuff. You know, do all, I mean, just enjoy being a boy. Why hurry and get married? Man, you're going to be married. Once you're married, you're married. And you just enjoy life. I like seeing, you know, the 18, 19-year-olds, 20-year-old boys, you know, goofing off with the young boys. See, that's the thing about homeschooling that I like, and the thing about formal education I don't like, is formal education, the child focuses to their age of 2 years up or 2 years down. That's basically their focus, peer group. Where when you had to run one-room schoolhouse, you had them all put in there. Where a homeschool, the kids got to deal with, depending on how many is in the family, anywhere from here all the way up to adults. So they're more well-rounded in social life with people. Where the kids with just their little group, the peer pressure becomes so powerful, they have a hard time standing against that. Jeremy? Right.
We were guessing them to be 8-9 years younger than what they really were, which is something you don't see in mainstream churches. I mean, you would never have a teenage girl come up to you and ask you to take your baby.
Right.
For the mainstream church.
Right.
That's the last thing they want to do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
They don't want to mess their nails.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's true. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I take
the baby. The biggest teenager. Yeah, what mainstream church would have somebody sing "It's Best with a Gun on their side"? But that special was a blessing.
Amen.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Let's try to finish this chapter out. 33, but he that is married careth for the things that are of the world, how he may please his wife. Notice consideration is very important. Consideration. Now, I can remember growing up, and Dad would always tell me, take your shoes off, come in the house. Don't track in here. Why? Consideration for Mom. And we need to be considerate. If you're going to be late, and you have a set time where they usually expect to be home, give them a call. Let her know. If you don't have a set time, then forget it. Consideration. But one of the biggest things is being considerate of others, thinking of others. 34, there is a difference also between a wife and a virgin. The unmarried woman careth for the things of the Lord, that she may be holy, both in body and spirit. But she that is married careth for the things of the world, how she may please her husband. Okay, so she's considerate of him, he's considerate of her. An ideal marriage is when two want to glorify God, but yet they want to, in their process of glorifying God together, they try to help each other as they're working together glorify God. 35, it says, and of this I speak for your own profit, not that I may cast a snare upon you, but for that which is comely, and that ye may attend unto the Lord without distraction. But if any man think that he behaveth himself uncomely toward his virgin, if she pass the flower of her age, it's obvious. See how the Bible writes it? Writes it where it buzzes over the kids' heads. Keeps them pure. Your cross-reference on that flower of the age is Leviticus 15 to get more intimate on that. And need so require, let him do what he will, he sinneth not, let them marry. Nevertheless, he that standeth steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but hath power over his own will, and hath so decreed in his heart that he will keep his virgin, doeth well. So then he that giveth her in marriage doeth well, but he that giveth her not in marriage doeth better. The wife is bound by the law as long as her husband liveth. But if her husband be dead, she is at liberty to be married to whom she will, only in the Lord. Interesting. Make sure that's the only in the Lord. But she is happier if she so abide after my judgment. I think also that I have the Spirit of God. Now the standard verse that's used about saved people marrying, not marrying unsaved, is 2 Corinthians 6:14 about being unequally yoked. Okay, but that's right there, only in the Lord. Saved, married, saved, and you can take that even tighter, Bible believers marry Bible believers. Now, I mean, if you want to avoid as least problems you can. I remember when I was a teenager, I was sitting in a class, a community Bible church, and they got talking about this, marriage, stuff like that, and one lady raised her hand. She said, well, I married my husband, and he was lost, and look how it happened. He's saved. So what is she, a pragmatic? She didn't care what the Bible said? That's really what she's saying, the end justified the means. Well, as time goes on, they're divorced. If she's going to disobey the Bible in one area, she's going to do it in another area. So the Bible command is marry those of like faith. Okay, that's chapter 7. Any questions, comments?